Hooray, you are very sorry that Charles is not presenting, and I regret that he is not here because he is a thespian, and amongst other things, he has the most wonderful voice for you to listen to, so I apologize that you have to listen to me engage in another speed-talking exercise. Charles also has nothing to disclose. As far as I know, he was not raised in Indiana, so he cannot tell you where any of the cities are, even that manufacture travel trailers, and CDC has also not endorsed his presentation, so I am vicariously out here on my own for him. Similarly to the previous presentation, we'd like to give you some risk communication basics, which I hope will be particularly helpful to the students in the audience. Describe for you some of the challenges that we encountered in getting information out in a post-Katrina environment, which is, if you've watched Mad Max and the Thunderdome, pretty darn similar, except we didn't have as good a clothing. Talk about what's involved in effective communication planning and effective messaging, and then finally look at some strategies for how to get the information out there. I heard in a presentation earlier this week at APHA that communication wound up in the top 8 things that people think need to be part of public health. Now, most of you know that that occurs to people after they have completed all the data, when they come to you and they say, "Can we do a news release on this thing?" And then you're trying to rapidly get up to speed. One of the things that characterized our FEMA response was that we were partnering with the scientists every step of the way. And one of the great growth areas, I think, that occurred as a result of the response is the scientific staff became very aware of how critical communication was to the whole process, and that it was really a communication response as much as it was a science response. What we did was we tried to provide people information that would tell them, good, bad, and ugly, what they could expect. And this was a challenge because we were working inside government where people didn't want to tell the bad and the ugly, they only wanted to tell the good. Unfortunately, there was not a lot of good to tell as far as the audience was concerned. So our job was to see how we could frame this information in a way that people could understand and accept, that would allow them to be able to receive information and take action to protect their health as they moved forward. So again, we looked at what the theoretical constructs were and looked at our 4 models. And we reasoned that people who had been living in FEMA trailers for more than 2 years might be exceedingly frustrated about the fact they were still in the trailer. There was no additional housing stock for them to move into. They didn't want to leave their home, and they had just been told that they were breathing a potentially hazardous gas. And they might have difficulty hearing and processing information that would help them be safe in this environment and help them prove their environment. We also reasoned that people's perception of their risk for formaldehyde would be their reality regardless of what the data told them. And that if they had felt as though they'd had a disappointing experience with the federal government ever since they failed to be evacuated from the dome in a timely fashion, that there may be a reason that they would not believe CDC when we came to town and told them, "We're from the government, we're here to help you." And finally, that residents who were upset and mistrustful might have a negative frame, and they might even be justified in having that. So we had a fairly simple strategy, which was we wanted to win trust and gain credibility so that we could get information to people. And as you can see in the illustration, we did a lot of that in a very person-to-person way. This is another formula that says that successful communication comes from a combination of credibility and trust. And if you move backward and look at credibility, things that go into credibility include the accuracy of your information. So our science, Dr. Mike McGeehan, who headed this entire response, has phrased this better than anybody that I have heard. He says, when CDC goes out with information, we stake our reputation on that. And the reason we stake our reputation on it is because we have done our homework and we know the data we're going forward with are rock solid accurate. So that's where CDC is on the spectrum of accuracy. We have not in our history been quite so nimble in our speed of release, but we rapidly accelerated our ability to release information in this response, and that added to our credibility. And one of the things we did in that was to apply our risk communication principles and work very closely with our scientists to help them understand how that affected their natural tendencies to communicate. And then finally, trust is a function of empathy and openness. And we'll talk about that a little bit more as we go through. So what we did was very simple. We were consistent. We were simple. We tried to be timely. We were always accurate. And we looked at the news clips every single day to see what people were saying. And we looked at the calls that were coming in on our 800 line to see what questions people were asking so that we could put that information immediately back into our response effort. We want you to avoid some things when you were doing response. One of those is technical jargon. Our scientific staff had done a wonderful job of coming up with a term called temporary housing unit, or THU, or THU, if you like the to pronounce your acronyms easily. And what we found when we went out and talked with people who were living in Louisiana and Mississippi was no one was referring to their residents as a temporary housing unit. They were referring to them as trailers. They weren't referring them to them as travel trailers, park models, and mobile homes. They were just referring to them as trailers. Now, people within government didn't want to call them trailers because trailers had a bad name. However, if we had called them temporary housing units, no one would have known what we were talking about. So we fought hard for the ability to call a trailer a trailer. Avoid condescending and judgmental phrases. Just because someone does not have a high school education and lives in a travel trailer as a result of a catastrophe that they didn't cause doesn't mean that those people are not intelligent and very capable of managing their lives under difficult circumstances. And we also fought hard to be sure that we were elevating our discussion to the level of public dialogue so that we could respect the people who were in those circumstances and take them information as equals. Try not to attack the people with whom you are taking information to, and also try not to attack your partners. It doesn't do well for government to appear publicly to be fighting. If you're going to have conversations, you need to do those on your own and then be able to go forward to present a combined solution to the community. Don't make promises that you can't keep, and don't allow other agencies to make promises on your behalf. We did a lot of backdoor negotiation to make sure that we did not overpromise and that we could always deliver on things that we pledged. Try to avoid discussing money, particularly if you're not the agency that has the money, and don't be humorous. This is not a funny situation for the people who are in the circumstances, and so it should not be a funny situation for the people who are coming in to help. Simple five steps. First, have a solid plan. Know where you're going. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And what we like to do in our communication planning is start with the outcome. As Stephen Covey says, begin with the end in mind. What is it that we would like to see at the end of this activity? And then we develop a plan to make that happen. It's best if you can be the first source of information, because every other source of information is measured against the first person that was out there. And so that's one of the reasons that CDC has a priority for trying to be out the door rapidly. It's important to express empathy, because if you don't acknowledge that you recognize the circumstances in which people are living and that you appreciate that situation, mental noise takes over and they will not be able to hear any other thing that you are trying to tell them. You have to show competence and expertise, and we did that in careful selection of spokespersons and people who were out there in the community, and remain open, honest, and accessible, which ranges all the way from providing a variety of points of access to the organization to being willing to stay around after sessions and answer people's questions personally. So again, in a RISC-COM message, these are the elements that make up a classic good risk communication message. First, you express empathy. Again, that deals with the mental noise. Secondly, you tell what you know, and these are confirmed facts and action steps that you are taking. The third thing you do is tell what you don't know. This is the biggest hurdle for most scientists and government officials to get over, because we don't like to admit that we may not know everything. And then finally, tell what you're doing, because in the absence of having knowledge, you're probably just not sitting there saying, oh, geez, we don't have a clue about what to do. You're probably doing quite a lot of stuff. And so it's important to describe what you're doing, because that gives people the sense that their government is working on their behalf. Make a statement of commitment. The commitment could be as simple as, we are working on this as hard as we can, and we will let you know next week what kind of progress we've made. But make a commitment to the community, and make it a commitment that you can follow up, and then tell people where they can get more information. A solid message focuses on people. It's positive. It's simple. It uses active verbs. I abhor the passive. Vince Covello says you should have a 9-word maximum. Now, when your agency name is Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, National Center for Environmental Health, and Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, you're pretty much toast before you've started, but give it your best shot. And single thought, if you find yourself writing "and" in the middle of a message, you've just started a new message. So what we did was we established our communication objectives. We tried to determine what we wanted things to look like at the end of the process. We really worked to understand what the concerns of the residents were. How many of you have attended those meetings where people in the meeting are saying, what they need to understand is? Well, I'm here to tell you, if you take nothing more home from this, people in the aftermath of crises understand everything that they need to understand. They are doing a perfectly fabulous job of managing to survive and keep their families going day to day. They don't need to understand anything else. So what we have to do is understand what they want and then be able to meet them on that common ground. So here were our key messages. We developed these in November of 2007. They have not changed. CDC believes everyone deserves a safe and healthy place to live. We started almost every communication, every meeting with that. All of our spokespersons had that one committed to memory. Now you'll see we violated the 9-word rule here. CDC is taking several steps to gather information to assist FEMA in protecting the health of people now living in trailers in Louisiana and Mississippi. I think with a little more work, we could probably make that a little more intelligible. And CDC will share results of its work with residents, health officials, and government agencies. And then we had to follow through on all those. We also had a couple of other messages that we did not use as frequently as we used the first two, but this had to do with our intergovernmental partnership with FEMA to try to clarify lanes and who was in what lane and making sure we signaled if we were going to be moving into another lane. And as a result, our key messages remain constant. And that was a really important element of implementing a sustained risk communication response. We did not change messages every day. We didn't change them every week. We didn't change them every month. The same messages that we started with were the messages that we're still using today. Our supporting points were updated as new information came in, but the overarching messages that you develop for a response like this need to be strong enough to stand the test of time. And our communication objectives also didn't change. They were constant throughout the response, and that allowed us to make sure that we continued on the same road and we weren't wandering in the wilderness. If you're delivering messages, cut down on the number of spokespersons. The fewer the better. One is ideal, but you will find yourself probably having more than one, but numbers that go into three digits are probably not great. Be consistent in your responses. In partnerships, when you're in doing a complex response to an emergency situation, there will be many people involved. It helps to delineate lanes and make sure that people, that the agencies stay in their lane. We brought in key officials for news conferences, and that actually worked for us to help increase trust because Dr. Gerberding went to New Orleans, or actually Dr. Gerberding went to Washington, Dr. Henry Falk went to New Orleans, and the fact that we sent senior people in for those events demonstrated that we cared about the community at a level that we wanted to have a senior person there, that a senior person cared enough to be there in person. We've analyzed the incoming 800 calls and the news clips on a daily basis. When you're in an emergency response and trust is an issue and you're a representative of government, you can't afford to let that lag. It's enormously labor-intensive, but it was also enormously valuable. And it helps to have communication staff at all public activities because these are people who have expertise in response and expertise in working with audiences, and they're able to counsel, not only counsel the spokespersons, but also to gather information from that event that can be used and folded back into the process. Some of the big lessons we learned were do all your arm wrestling with partners that is needed and do it behind closed doors and get your agreements before you get out there in public. Key messages have to be simple, empathetic, open, honest, and focus on people. The people are what we care about. We're in public health. CDC has for several years said be first, be right, be credible. We would also add be consistent. And limit your number of spokespersons. Limit the number of agency-to-agency points of contact. Now, this was a very interesting finding, and what we did with our partner agency was Dr. McGeehan and one other person talked to a person at the key partner agency. I talked to the communication director, and one of our senior press officers talked to their senior press officer. Those were the only points of contact that we had with the agency, because what we found was if we had multiple points of contact, that information would be misconstrued even in an intergovernmental response. So we clearly delineated what our points of contact were and we stuck with them. And then finally, continually monitor your message effectiveness. Now we'll see if we can get the right one up here.